You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Odyssey Sports presents Big Time Baseball with MLB insider John Heyman and former major leaguer Tony Gwynn Jr.
Welcome into another episode of Big Time Baseball. I'm Tony Gwynn Jr. alongside my partner, John Heyman. A lot going on with not a lot going on right exactly. Now in baseball. First and foremost, up front, as an employee of the San Diego Padres, I have been asked not to speak on things concerning the lockout, so I will hold my end of the bargain up from that standpoint. However, you guys are in luck because John is not under those same stipulations. He will give you his thoughts on the lockout. A lot went on before the lockout in terms of free agency, which I thought was a big surprise. We'll get into some of those issues. Plus, Hall of Fame inductees were announced today, at least from the I believe it's the Early Baseball Era Committee and the Gold Days Era Committee got some of their nominees in. So before we get into that, John, how are you doing today? Welcome in.
I'm good. I mean, this is, you would think, a show about nothing, right? But we got plenty to talk about, a lot to talk about. We'll touch on some winners and losers from all the moves that were made, and it was fast and frantic with all the moves. It was terrific, and I will give you my take on the remaining top free agents, the pitching market, and we're going to get into that Hall of Fame, and my ballot stirred up some controversy. I'm not proud of that necessarily, but I'm certainly welcome to discuss that. Very happy to discuss it. And, yeah, we're going to touch on the lockout briefly. I'm not going to go crazy on the lockout. It's going to be a long lockout. I'll say that right up front, but we'll hit on that at the end sometime.
All right, well, let's start with the winners and losers of this, what I thought was a crazy free agency, only from the standpoint of with that collective bargaining agreement, with the lockout looming at the time, you just didn't think there would be a lot of movement. That didn't seem to be the case. And who'd you have as some of your winners and losers?
Yeah, absolutely. A ton of movement. I mean, obviously, somebody's got money. Somebody's willing to spend it. And I've got five winners right up front. You're right. It was really a lot of fun, I think, for all the fans. Maybe not as much fun for me and Ken Rosenthal and Joel Sherman and Jeff Passan, but it was – we have a break now, so we're thankful for that. And I got my winners. The Mets, to me, is the number one winner. I mean, they got Scherzer to go along with DeGrom now. I mean, Steve Cohen threw his money around. I'm sure not all the owners are thrilled with it, but, you know, they got Marte to play center, Canna, Escobar, you know, all good moves. I like what they did, and they're still operating. I mean, once we get back, they're going to try to get us one more starting pitcher and one more hitter, and wouldn't be shocked if it was Chris Bryant, but we're going to touch on all these different remaining great free agents later. My other winners are the Tigers. E-Rod, I like him very much. You know, they paid him a lot, but well worth it. Baez, I like him more than most, so they filled shortstop, and I like Barnhart as a catcher. I thought that was very good defensively. He's one of the best in the game. I like what the Marlins did also with the catcher with the Stallings. Garcia will certainly help their offense. They're still working on the offense. Obviously, the Rangers are another winner with that $500 million DP combination now with Seager and Semien. You got to give them in the list. And, of course, the Mariners, who signed the reigning AL Cy Young winner in Robbie Ray. So those are my five winners. We can get to the losers after. Let me say this.
I find it so interesting, and it's fascinating to me. In both of the last two off seasons, you know, one coming out of a pandemic, where teams seemingly were reluctant to go out and spend, and then one in this past this offseason that we're in right now, with the lockout looming at the time, there were some teams that were able to capitalize on it. It was the Padres in the 2020 offseason. This year, teams like the Mets and Detroit, really without a ton of competition, were able to capitalize and make their teams a lot better heading into what, you know, we hope for is a full 2022 season. I found that to be interesting. Who are your losers, John?
My losers, well, the big market teams, I think they're waiting. You know, my thought on this is they're waiting to see what the threshold is and the tax is going to be before they dive in. Those other teams, now the Mets, Steve Cohen, he probably doesn't care about the tax. He's got plenty of money, as we know, and the other teams really aren't near the tax that I had as winners. But mostly big market teams, the Yankees, I mean, you know, Jolie Rodriguez is their only signing so far. I mean, $2 million. I mean, that's really not the Yankees. I mean, you know, hopefully they can address Aaron Judge at some point, but they need to get better too. So right now the Yankees, I mean, the Red Sox, they're doing some small stuff. They brought in Paxton. So they brought it, paid him a lot of money for a guy who's going to be ready halfway through the year. But, you know, certainly an improvement, but they have not done anything. I mean, since they traded Betts to the Dodgers, you know, they've been doing a lot of small stuff. They obviously had a terrific year this year, so they did a good job with it. But right now, to me, they're a loser. The Dodgers, obviously, they lost Scherzer and they lost Seager, who they tried for, didn't quite keep. I think with Scherzer, along with those other teams, the Giants, who right now are one of my other losers, I think they were a little below the $40 million. The Mets went over $40 million a year, $43.3 million for Scherzer. They were, Dodgers were more in the $36 million range, but of course, they never got down to the final with the Dodgers. So, you know, it's not fair to compare their offer to the Mets' offer, but certainly the Mets made sure that they were going to get him. I'll just put it that way. But losing Seager, that hurt them. They really wanted to keep Seager with Turner at second. Now Turner is the shortstop. We will see. Going in, I don't think they were looking at the other shortstops, but we're going to talk a little bit about whether they might take a look at Carlos Correa or Story at this point, because right now they've gone backward quite a bit. They were to me the best team on paper to begin with, so they came from a good start, but got a lot to do. They also need to get Jansen back, which they haven't done yet. They did bring Chris Taylor back for 4 years, $60 million, which is about what we expected. Giants, to me, they lost their best hitter in Posey. They lost probably their second best pitcher in Gausman, who was really good. They did bring back Belt on a reasonable deal. They brought back DeSclafani and Wood on fair deals, and they imported Alex Wood. So they've been doing stuff. They're still a good team, but you know, we thought that 107 wins was a bit beyond what their talent should bring in the first place. And now that they've lost some players, you know, I think they've got work to do. And to me, the Astros are incomplete. You know, Verlander, that deal never got done, so we will see about that. And Correa, you know, they've made efforts. They have not gotten close yet, but still think they need to get a shortstop, whether that's Correa or Story. They need to do that. But, I mean, they're incomplete at this point, not really a fair loser.
Yeah, no, I don't think there's much question about some of those losers. And listen, the offseason at this point is not, there are still free agents available. There are still guys that could change the course of where some of these teams are at this point. Some of the more intriguing parts about this time of year, John, is hearing some of the backstories in terms of how these negotiations came to pass. You mentioned some of those guys who've signed. Semien, Seager, Stroman, Scherzer, Berrios, Gausman, Baez. What are some of the backstories in terms of how the negotiations went down with some of these guys?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to touch on the biggest one so far, which is Seager. I mean, the Dodgers really wanted to keep him, and they were willing to go pretty far, I think, to keep him. My understanding is they would have made an offer, and maybe perhaps they did, of $300 million or more, but with deferrals, kind of like they did with Betts, right? They gave him a $365 million, I believe it was, a lot of deferrals. Right. So the actual value, I have it as coming in as a 292. At least that's what I was told. I didn't do any mathematical calculations on that, but 292. So, I mean, I think Seager was in that category. I don't know if it's going to be 365, but 300, something like that with deferrals. So he would have gotten considerably less than what he got with Texas. He got $325 with Texas. Texas also, no deferrals, a little bit front-loaded there. He's got no state tax in Texas, so it's probably at least a $50 million difference there. So, you know, to me, it would be hard to leave L.A. I envy you living in Southern California. I don't happen to live there. I mean, you know, it's easy for me to say I might have taken less money, but that's not the way free agency works. You know, you go for the team that wants you the most, and Texas wanted him the most. You know, Scherzer is another one, very interesting one, obviously a record deal, getting $129 million over 3 years. Steve Cohen wanted to make sure that he would get him, and he did. They had a Zoom call. His wife talked to Erica Scherzer. They were really getting close, and, you know, it doesn't hurt. But obviously the money in the end is a major factor. We assumed, at least I did, and probably wrongly, that the Dodgers were the perceived favorite because as a trade piece, he said he only wanted to go to L.A. or San Diego. So I thought, you know, for some reason he likes Southern California, as I do, as you do, and I don't blame him. And I think a lot of people felt that as well. But, you know, he does live in Jupiter, Florida, which was near the spring training site of the Nats and only about 45 minutes from the Mets site. So, you know, it's easier for him to be on the East Coast, really. So maybe the Mets didn't have to overpay by that much. We'll never know. But, you know, they, you know, certainly Seager was not anxious to go to the Mets as a trade piece. The Mets without him, I mean, Scherzer, without Scherzer, they're not really a contender on paper. Now with him and with DeGrom, they look really pretty darn good. And, you know, certainly the money is in the end what decides things. You know, Baez is an interesting one. He got $140 million from Detroit. We knew that they didn't want to go to $300 million for anybody, including Correa, even though they love Correa. And A.J. Hinch had the connection there with Correa. But Baez makes perfect sense for them, fits in there. They got Eduardo Rodriguez. They've got Barnhart still working. So, I mean, there are certain teams that we know are looking at shortstops. Houston is one of those teams, and they'll come up with somebody, whether it's Correa or Story, and we'll touch on each of these stars that are remaining individually, and including Verlander, who's still out there, but certainly Bryant, Correa, Story, Castellanos. We still have a lot to do. We still have a lot of work to do, but it was very exciting, and obviously Seager and some of these other players really wanted to get it done and not wait through the lockout without a deal, and I get that, and they ended up with very good deals. You know, most of them got beyond the expectations. So there's certainly money out there in Major League Baseball.
I guess that's what we're going to find out one way or the other as it pertains to that. So as we go through this this lockout that's taking place, doesn't mean baseball is completely stopped, right? The Hall of Fame had some new elected members here recently, and John, you kind of caught some flack for your ballot a little bit, man. You want to talk about it a little bit?
Yeah, I did catch a lot of flack. I mean, I think the biggest problem is that the six best, shall we say, or most accomplished players all are linked to steroids. So if you're not in favor of steroids, or if you're not if you're opposed to steroids, your ballot's not going to look that great to a lot of people, because there are a lot of fans and many writers who at this point are saying it was all part of the era of steroids, and let's move past it. And just, it's easier to vote on the statistics and the achievements. But to me, the guys who did the steroids got themselves more achievements. They got themselves more money, and this is an honor. It's not a court of law. And I'm in that group. There are some other writers who are well-known who are against the steroids. So I'm generally against the steroids. I've always voted against the steroid guys, at least initially. Eventually, with Barry Bonds, I finally warmed up after a few years of not voting for him. And I understood and believed the narrative that he did not do steroids until after Sosa and McGuire passed him. And he did steroids sometime around 2000 and continued to do them. And you could see a clear delineation in his career from an incredibly great player to Babe Ruth plus. You know, it became a different player. So I'm taking the position that he was a Hall of Famer before taking any steroids. He had three MVPs. He had seven top five finishes. But it is weird to vote for him, not for the other steroid guys, particularly Clemens. And I get that. I know Clemens, he went to Toronto a little bit earlier than I believe Bonds took the steroids. It's pretty clear to me that his career, which was said by Dan Duquette, and when he left Boston to be in the twilight, maybe he was wrong. Maybe certainly he had something left. But, mm-hmm. I mean, he went from a great pitcher to the best pitcher in baseball by quite a bit when he went to Toronto. So it's pretty clear earlier he went to the steroids. So that's why I still have not been able to vote for him. I don't vote for any other steroid guys. So I pick the best of the non-steroid group and vote for them. I think Scott Rolen was a great two-way player.
Yeah,
I have voted for him. Andruw Jones, I think he's one of the greatest outfielders I've ever seen. So I vote for any. Plus, he had 400 home runs. Plus, I vote for him. Jeff Kent, I think he was an impact player on offense. I vote for him. And Curt Schilling, I hold my nose, and I vote for him because I don't do it on personality. I know people say I didn't vote for Albert Bell because of personality. It's not about personality. Nothing to do with personality. I mean, Kent and Bonds didn't have winning personality. It's nothing to do with personality. I don't know how many times I can say that.
Never has.
Nobody believes it. You know, Kent and Bonds were not bon vivants. I vote for them. Schilling, I did not get along with at all before, even when he was playing. Now he's had some bizarre opinions, but I put that aside and I say, you know what? He had a great impact on the game. You know, whether I like the guy or not, he's a Hall of Famer. So that's how I came up with those five: Bonds, Rolen, Kent, and Schilling. Tough ballot. There are a lot of guys on there that were just close, very close, and I may go and vote for them next year, including Wagner, Helton, Rollins, and Hunter. There are some other guys, pretty darn good careers too. Vizquel, Abreu, Hudson, in that category, Teixeira. And even put Lincecum, because I like a guy who had a major impact, even if he didn't have the length, so I considered him. But, you know, I got flack, and I understand there are, you know, people will look at inconsistency, voting for Bonds and not the other steroid guys. But, you know, I look at inconsistencies because I can see the ballots now and the opinions coming in. We'll see how it goes. But, you know, nobody votes for Sosa. He was reported to have failed that survey test in 2003. He gets very few votes, enough to stay on the ballot. And Ortiz has got all this wave of support, and I got so much flack for not including Ortiz. And I didn't vote for Bonds the first year he was on either. So, I'm very tough on the steroids. I eventually got swayed on Bonds that he was a Hall of Famer before he took the steroids. But I don't see the difference between Ortiz and Sosa. To me, they're both, on their achievements, clearly above the line. They're clearly Hall of Famers based on what they did in their careers. But to me, they're equally linked to steroids. But we're going to see Sosa get, 10 or 15% of the vote. And we're going to see Ortiz, he may even get in, but he's certainly going to get more than 50% based on what I see out there. Now, you play the game. You may have a different opinion. I understand if someone is okay with the steroids. I get it. I don't begrudge it. It's a difficult decision. The achievements are what they are. And, it's certainly easier to do it that way. What are your thoughts on these guys? I mean, these are guys that you played with in your career, so you certainly would have definite and valid opinions of them.
Yeah, no, Bonds it's a no-brainer for me. I mean, the alleged start of usage was, 98 or 99? He had already won three MVPs, two back-to-back at that point. He was the best player in the league at that point. And it was close in terms of Griffey being right there, but he was literally a Hall of Famer at that point in my mind. And then he took his career to another stratosphere thereafter. So he's a no brainer to me. I think David Ortiz is a Hall of Famer. For me, the ones that stood out to me most, and I like all your picks. I played in the same division as Scott Rolen. I got to see him on a consistent basis as a young player, and he was as good of a two-way player as we had in the league at that point. So I love that pick. I focused in on Buck O'Neill. I was happy to see him get in by the early baseball committee. He was a fixture in terms of being a coach in the Negro League and then being one of the first coaches in Major League Baseball. I thought that was a big get for the Hall of Fame. And in terms of story, it's a tough call for a lot of people. I grew up watching a lot of the players in that era, and my dad played in that era. And the fact of the matter is that it was a large usage across the league. It seemed as though, and so I agree. For the most part, I like Schilling as well. As you mentioned, this has never been about personalities. It should never be about person. It's about what you put on the field. And he definitely, from that standpoint, is deserving. So I think your ballot's good. I know you got caught a lot of flack for it, but I personally thought it was good. Let's slide into the John Heyman's inside corner. Let's talk about some of.
I want to thank you for being so reasonable there. I appreciate that. You're not like all those people on Twitter who are going crazy. So I really appreciate that. And I think you've had some very good thoughts there. I really do.
Let's talk about some of those big names that were still left out on the board. Correa is still out there. Trevor Story, Chris Bryant. All of a sudden, Freeman, who's also we thought was a no-brainer to go back to Braves, and it still could be. You're starting to hear his name pop up in the Dodger cycle a little bit. And I think a few weeks ago I said something along those lines that that's something that could happen if they lost Corey Seager, and that may be one of the answers. Also, you missed it, Nick Castellanos and Kyle Schwarber also still available on that free agent market.
Yeah, I mean, boy, there's a lot of good players left. I mean, we had so many good signings, but a tremendous number left. I'm going to start with Freeman since you mentioned him. It's very interesting that he's still out there. Everybody figured he was definitely going back to the Braves. I think at this point you could say it's not a definite. I mean, I don't think there's any way around that. My understanding is he wants 6 years, around $180 million, something like that. Doesn't seem unreasonable to me with what he's accomplished.
No.
We used not to give, not we, but they used to give 10-year deals to 32 years.
Yeah, it's certainly not us giving it out.
No, I don't have that kind of money. But, I mean, A-Rod and Pujols, around 32, got 10-year deals as free agents. Freeman is a free agent now. I understand he's talking to his team, his own team, about coming back, and certainly they might want a discount, a hometown discount or something, but I mean, the Braves, they did great on the field. They do great off the field. They make a lot of money. I'm surprised it's gotten to this point. But since it has, there's no question we have to consider the possibility that he might leave. The Dodgers do make sense. They could slide Muncy over to second. Obviously, losing Seager takes out a big left-handed bat. You wonder, though, does Muncy, can he play second on a regular basis? They'll have to answer that question. You know, I'm not sure the answer to that question.
It certainly seems like he could possibly stay a little healthier over there, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe, or DH, right? There could be a DH, right?
No doubt.
So he could fit the Dodgers. They could use Muncy, even though he's a good first baseman, as well as Freeman. Freeman could be the first baseman, and Muncy could DH. So I wouldn't rule it out. And the Yankees are certainly – like Freeman, they're interested, they're involved. I mean, are they going to beat this? Are they going to go to the 6 for $180 or beat that enough to that he would actually leave the Braves? You know, I'm not sure. There are a few teams that are certainly asking around. Toronto did, although I'm not sure they need him. Their offense is incredible as is, but certainly Vlad could be a DH, could be even better. That was an interesting thing that I think Carlos Baerga brought up, but certainly a possibility. So the Freeman thing is an interesting thing to keep an eye on. And, there's so many others here that are still left. Bryant, I've heard several teams connected to him, including the Padres. He went to UC San Diego.
USD, University of San Diego.
Oh, I'm sorry. University of San Diego, different thing. Yeah. You know, yeah. East Coast people, we don't know anything that goes on west of the Hudson. So I'm glad
That's why you got me here on the West to take care of you on
the
that.
University of San, I appreciate that. The Angels, the Mets, who I mentioned earlier, Phillies, Angels, Mariners, Rockies. And you wonder about the Giants. He was there. He didn't have a great finish. I haven't heard a lot lately with the Giants, so I'm not going to be shocked if he leaves. But any of those teams, and certainly you got Steve Cohen there, so you know that's certainly a possibility with the Mets. And I have heard, I'm going to introduce the mystery team. I have heard a mystery team with Bryant. I have not confirmed it, so I'm not going to mention it. But there are a lot of teams with Bryant at this point. Carlos Correa, you know, the question has been, is he going to get the most money or is it going to be Seager? Going to be very interesting to see. Houston certainly still interested. They weren't anywhere near it with their $160 million offer. I think the big question there could be, could the Dodgers do it? You know, if they don't do Freeman, you know, I thought they would only go for Seager. And if they didn't get Seager, they have Turner there. But, you know, with Seager not there now, so much extra money that they're not spending, you can't rule out the Dodgers for Correa. So those would be my two thoughts for Correa right now. Would be Houston or the Dodgers. Story, I have heard three teams, Seattle, Houston, and Boston. So it would be interesting to see with Boston. Obviously could start out at second base, potentially. And we'll see what goes from there. And Bogart says has an opt-out after the year, and then he could slide over to shortstop after that. We shall see what they do there. They have gotten Jackie Bradley Jr., but they could somehow fit him into center on a part-time basis. I'm not sure Kike would slide back to second, so that gives Story a potential there. And I have heard there is a mystery team, which I have not confirmed with Story as well. And I'm sure there are others. You know, we know Colorado was interested in Story and bringing him back. From what I understand, I don't think, and I'm getting this second, and I don't think Story will go back to Colorado at this point. They are in somewhat of a rebuild. I like some of the things they've done. You know, I mean, I like the fact they're trying. They were in on Bryant as well, if I didn't mention them. But I think that's probably a long shot that he goes back. But they have been in on it. Seattle certainly made an offer, and that's a possibility. And then we have Castellanos and Schwarber. Lots of teams still looking at that outfield market. Philly has been tied to Schwarber. That's always been my guess. I want to get one right, so I'm hoping Schwarber goes to Philly. Marlins are still looking for offense. They may end up with Rosario, but they're still looking at offense. Castellanos, you know, or some of those same teams I just mentioned, Padres, Rockies, potentially several other teams would be on him. He had a big year and should do quite well. And the last guy I want to touch on is Verlander. As we know, as I pointed out on Twitter, and it's been followed up on, his deal never became official with Houston. Had a great deal, 2 years, $50 million. I thought the agent, and he did a great job to get that deal back to Houston with an opt-out, and it was never official. So we don't know what's going on there, but he is still a free agent. I mean, the Yankees could jump back in. They had offered 1 year for $25 million. You think they'd work it out with Houston somehow. They usually do when something pops up, something happens, but he's still a free agent, so he's still out there as well. So there are a ton of great players still left. Even though we had many signed, this is a big free agent year.
Lastly, Mets. They need a manager. Who are the names they're looking at?
You know, I'm going to be surprised if they don't turn eventually to either Showalter, Osmus, or Espada. Espada, very well thought of, Houston Astros bench coach. Osmus has been a manager twice with Detroit. And with the Angels, where Billy Epler was his boss. Now, he was fired. That was an ownership decision by Artie Moreno. So Billy Epler still likes Osmus, from what I understand. And Showalter, which is going to be the people's choice, or church, as they say in Brooklyn. For people in New York, you know, obviously very experienced managers, managed with the Orioles and Texas and Arizona, started with the Yankees as a young guy. Now he's about 65, so we'll see. But you'd think they probably go the veteran route. Now, Espada has been a bench coach for a very good team for a long time now, so perhaps they will consider him seriously. I think they will, but those would be the three that I think they're looking at most carefully. But certainly, Quartaro, they're going to talk to from Tampa, is a candidate. Donnie Kelly, bench coach from Pittsburgh, is a candidate. And there are a lot of other names out there that are possibilities, you know, potentially Venable or Lombard. You know, we'll see. I mean, could Bochy be a candidate? I'm not sure. I think they have to look at, probably consider seriously, somebody with great experience. Their payroll is up over $250 million at this point, and they're still working. So they're still looking at hitters, pitchers. You know, we mentioned Bryant. I know they're looking at the pitching market. I think Kikuchi is on their radar, along with the Jays. So, you know, they may have a payroll close to $300 million. And it's going to be tough to entrust that with a guy with no experience. So they're going to have someone with at least a decent amount of experience, I think, for that team.
Wow. All right. Well, last but not least, as I mentioned before, I am not allowed to speak on the lockout because I am employed by the San Diego Padres. So I will step aside and hand the floor off to John in return to the lockout.
Okay, I understand.
In regards to the lockout, excuse me.
Sure. I'm not going to talk a long time on the lockout. At this point, I think we're a long way away. We know what it's about. It's about money. Certainly, both sides would like to see better competitive balance. And that is certainly a consideration that they're looking at. But we know, of course, it's about money. And the issue is here at this point, they're pretty far apart on the money. And there's an issue with the personalities. They have not been able to get along. They didn't get a deal in 2020 when Rob Manfred, the commissioner, had to order them back. The union has new leadership, and things have changed. Obviously, there were 25 years of labor peace with MLB, and you know, they were able to work things out with the succession of union heads, Don Fehr and Mike Weiner, Rick Shapiro, and they have not been able to get together here. I'm not blaming one side or the other, but there's certainly a personality conflict, and that's a big issue. You know, obviously, the financial issues are, where does the threshold go? How high does it go? We certainly think it'll go up, but how high? I think right now the union wants it at 245 and MLB at 214, so they got quite a gap there. They're going to probably raise the minimum salary. Are they going to establish a floor? I kind of like that idea for competitive balance. The union doesn't like it because they think that goes along with a cap. The floor could be kind of a soft floor, though, where you just give penalties if you're under a certain amount of money. So I kind of like that idea. You know, on other issues, free agency, they're going to have to figure that out. They're far apart on that still. It's been 6 years for a long time. I understand that the union would like it to be fewer, maybe 5 years or something like that. But, you know, in terms of competitive balance, that's tough for the teams that have star players that aren't exactly the richest teams. And do they lose them after five instead of six? We shall see. The postseason's another issue. The universal DH, I think they'll figure that out. Seems like both sides are on the same page on that one, that there is a universal DH. It certainly protects the assets, the pitchers, and it adds a player starting. It should add some money being paid also to cover the DH. So, I mean, there's a lot. Revenue sharing is another thing. Got a lot to talk about. And the bad news is they're very far apart. The good news is there's a lot of time to figure this out. They just got to figure it out so that there's time to sign all these free agents that we talked about and to have at least a 3-4 week spring training and then get the season going. And, you know, I'm very hopeful and optimistic that there will be a full season. You know, is it possible it could start a little bit late? It's possible. I know it's early to be talking about that now, but they are pretty far apart. So got a lot of work to do, and we're still optimistic here.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Big Time Baseball. You can catch us every other week in the offseason. Try to give some time for some news to build. But we look forward to hearing you. Once again, thank you for tuning in to Big Time Baseball. Make sure you check back every Monday. Myself, Cody Decker, John Heyman will be here to serve. Every episode is on the Odyssey app, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you find your favorite podcast. Leave us a comment. And a 5-star rating if you feel so. If you feel like it, we'll be sure to keep the baseball conversation rolling.
You should be in sales, Tony. You can do it all.
That's what they got me on here. I need to try to get these folks to keep coming back and listening. Until next time, we'll catch you later.